Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today's postpartum story is with Ivy Tumlinson. She shares the challenges of her experience after a fast, furious, unmedicated, low-intervention hospital birth, which included breastfeeding issues that led to exclusively pumping and difficulties in healing her pelvic floor. Check out what helped her find her way and what she would do differently next time. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Branch Basics, making cleaning your house simple, affordable, and sustainable with products that actually work. Get 15% off a starter kit today by using the code BIRTHFUL at branchbasics.com. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by ModCloth, offering vintage-inspired clothing in an inclusive size range that celebrates all bodies. Get 25% off $100 or more by using the code BIRTHFUL at modcloth.com. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, my new parents and parents-to-be. Thanks again for all the love you give this show. And if you like what you hear, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a thing. To best support this podcast, support its sponsors, please, which in today's case are Branch Basics and ModCloth. And also, if you want to truly prepare for the first few weeks with your newborn, then go to birthfulcourses.com to sign up for my Thrive with Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes. And do it now before baby arrives. Let's get you postpartum ready. Also, a quick reminder that I have a short survey open for the whole month of January where you can weigh in on what you want me to do for 2019, what you want from this podcast. So you can fill it out by going to birthful.com/2019 with the 2019 written in number, so 2019. I'll also include the links in the show notes. One thing that I'm strongly considering is creating an online childbirth education class. So if that sounds interesting to you, then please go fill out the survey at birthful.com/2019. Okay, so today's story comes from Ivy Tumlinson, who is here to share her fast and furious, unmedicated, low-intervention hospital birth, followed by a postpartum, which was far more challenging than she expected due to issues with breastfeeding, her healing, and emotional health as well. So let's do it. Ivy, welcome. So great to have you here on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear your story and, you know... I'm not going to even cue people into what we're going to talk about. Okay. Before we share your story. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So my name is Ivy. I'm married to my husband, Adam, and we have a 15-month-old daughter named Aura and a French bulldog named Cassius.
Yay. So we're going to be talking about Aura's birth, but yes. Also more importantly, your postpartum period with her, because that's what you said threw you more for loop. So give us a little bit of background. Think back 2 years ago when you found out you were pregnant and approaching pregnant, you know, being in the pregnant state. What were your thoughts towards birth, and how did you prepare for your experience?
Sure. So Adam and I were trying to have a baby for about 10 months. We're having some, you know, we're not having any luck. So I started going to acupuncture. I went for 10 visits and all of a sudden got pregnant. It was great. It was right before Christmas. We were like totally over the moon. I hadn't really thought about what type of birth I wanted at that point. You know, I was planning on just going with my regular I used to see a physician's assistant in a gynecologist's office. So I figured I would just go with her and, you know, we'd kind of play it by ear. So, you know, I went for the first visit with the OB was at 12 weeks and that went okay, but I really wasn't super impressed. I didn't really feel heard, I guess. And shortly after that visit, I just happened to watch The Business of Being Born, like so many other people who get interested in unmedicated birth. And it was at that point that I decided that I definitely wanted an unmedicated birth and I wanted to try practice with midwives. You know, I didn't want a home birth. I knew that much, but I did want to go for an unmedicated hospital birth. I liked having kind of the backup of the medical interventions if I needed those, but I also wanted to try it without many interventions. So I actually found a practice that was actually closer to my house that had certified nurse midwives as well as OBs, which I also like that. That way, in case I had any complications during pregnancy, I would be able to meet with the obstetricians there. So we made a plan to have a birth in the alternative birthing center in one of our local hospitals. So it's essentially like a mini birth center in a hospital. There's a big tub in it. You can't give birth in the tub, but you can labor in the tub, which I was really, really looking forward to. And, you know, it's a little more homey. There's a full size bed in there. And it's for people who are looking for an unmedicated labor and birth.
Awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds lovely. And I like the idea of a full size bed. In like making it
yes.
different than a hospital bed, just to give you a different
yeah.
perspective. I always look at like birth rooms. I Google birth rooms throughout the world to see the differences. And there's some that are so like have ropes and ladders. And I always wish, we could, you know, this could be a great thing to get your mind off of that set hospital room environment. So I appreciate
Absolutely.
Your birth center. So you did that. Did you take any childbirth education classes? Anything else?
Yes. Yes. So I started taking prenatal yoga at a local yoga studio. Well, it's sort of like a health and wellness studio for, you know, pregnant families, and also they do some mama and baby classes. So it's owned by a doula, and she has a comprehensive childbirth course. It was like 7 weeks long, 3 hours a week. It was really comprehensive, and I felt like it gave me a good sense of all of my options, you know, from the really, you know, intervention heavy options to the lower intervention options. My husband and I took that, and gave us a good place to start from. I also did a ton of my own research. I'm the kind of person who, like, information helps me to feel a little bit more in control, or I guess as in control as one can feel when you're pregnant and about to give birth. So I did a lot of research on my own. I listened to a lot of podcasts like this one. And I read basically everything that I could get my hands on. I listened to a lot of birth stories. I also, in my third trimester, finally downloaded Expectful. And I had been meaning to my whole pregnancy, because I really wanted to get into meditation, because I felt like it would really help with kind of my mindset. And I loved it. Every night I would go into what would become Aura's room and sit in the recliner and just, like, you know, it gave me the space to kind of connect with myself and connect with my baby, and like really got me in the right frame of mind, I felt like, in order to, you know, get ready for what was to come.
Yay. I love hearing that. That sounds super cool.
Yes.
You did all the things and got you in, like, both mentally and physically in a space where you felt you were ready for this. Now, if we fast forward to the day of, how did you know you were in labor?
So I woke up. In the last weeks of pregnancy, of course, I wasn't sleeping that great, like many other pregnant people. And I had been waking up a lot around 3 o'clock in the morning, and I would like put on my Expectful back to sleep meditation, and it would work like a charm. The morning that I went into labor, I woke up, I remember it was 3:48 a.m. and I felt a contraction, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's a contraction. Like, my body's doing something. And I was like, all right, Ivy, I, you know, just go back to sleep. I gotta rest. This could just be prodromal labor. You know, I was only 39 weeks. And in my head, I had convinced myself that I was going to have a September baby, because she was due August 28th. And I was like, you know what, I'm gonna, you know, most first time moms go post dates. I'm definitely not gonna have this baby in August. She's gonna be a September baby. So it was August 26th. So I was like, this can't really be it. So I'm just gonna try to go back to sleep and, you know, kind of rest. That way, in case this is it, you know, I'll be ready. So of course I couldn't fall back asleep, even though I tried the meditation thing or whatever. So I was like, all right, I'm just gonna get up and take a shower. So it was like, I don't know, 5 a.m. and I'm in the shower and Adam came into the bathroom to use the restroom and he's like, why, what are you doing up? Why are you in the shower? And I like poked my head out the shower curtain. I was like, I'm having contractions. He was like, what? What do you mean? Really? And I was like, yes, but like, you know, this could just be prodromal stuff. I could be like this for days. They're really not consistent yet. Like, you know, he had planned to go to yoga. I was like, go to yoga. I'm gonna go to, I actually had a hair appointment scheduled for that morning. I was like, I'm gonna go to the salon. You know, I'll text you if anything else happens, but I'm really, I don't think this is it. I think like, you know, we still got a ways to go. So that was that. I sent him on his way and I went off to the salon and got my hair done and didn't say anything to my hairdresser, even though my contractions slowly became more and more consistent while I was sitting in the chair and I started getting a little bit more uncomfortable. You know, I could still talk through them. It really wasn't anything unmanageable. She had no idea until I told her at the end. So yeah, the contractions just sort of slowly picked up. They were becoming more regular and, you know, a little bit more uncomfortable. I believe I got home around 11 that morning, and you know, I was sort of trying to keep busy around the house, just still trying to ignore the contractions, but there's like definitely a pattern starting. And I had just so happened to download a contraction timer the night before, like just in case, you know, I'm almost at week 40, like this, I should probably have this on my phone now. So I started using the app to time contractions probably around 12 noon. And they were pretty consistent right from the beginning, or from when I started timing, I should say. They were already like 5 minutes apart or less. And I was kind of like, whoa, like, am I timing these correct? Like, I don't know. I like thought like maybe I was timing them incorrectly or there was something wrong with the app. Like, you know, I was like, this can't be. Like, I haven't been in labor for that long. So I'm like texting my best friend, and she's like, you know, because she was going to be at the birth. And she was like, oh, like, what do they feel like? What are you doing? Like, if you want to speed them up, you should really go for a walk, like stay on your feet. And I was like, no, I don't think I need to help them progress. They're definitely progressing. Like, I'm gonna try to rest again.
Awesome. I love that. It's like, oh no, I'm good, woman.
I was like, no, like they're progressing just fine without me trying to make them progress. Like, I'm gonna try to take a nap. So, I laid down. The contraction slowed a little bit, but I definitely couldn't fall asleep. And around that time was when I started to kind of say my one affirmation, my what became my mantra during contractions, which was each wave brings me closer to my baby. And just, you know, every time the contraction would start, I would just start saying that to myself over and over until the contraction ended and I kind of got a little bit of a break. And that was really helpful for me. I think saying that over and over to myself and also keeping my eyes open during contractions so I could like, I would pick a point of focus and just sort of like try to kind of ground myself that way. That way, I don't know, that just sort of helped me to feel more in control. And I heard somewhere that they've done, I don't know how, if this is true or not, but I read somewhere that they have done studies where people's perception of pain is actually less when they have their eyes open. So I was like, okay, if I keep my eyes open during contractions, maybe they'll feel less painful or less intense or something. So I don't know if that worked or not, but it seemed to get me through. So, you know, I just kind of labored around the house a little bit. I had a yoga ball that I had been using while I was pregnant, just sort of, so I kind of rocked on that a little bit. I labored on the toilet for a little while, and that seemed to be a good place to labor, although it started to feel really intense when I was sitting on the toilet, where I was like feeling a lot of pressure and feeling like I had to poop. And I was like, oh my God, if people say that when you feel like you have to poop, that means the baby's coming. So like these are like the thoughts that are going through my head. So Adam was in the shower at that point and I was like,
Oh, I'm so
Adam.
glad you just said something because I was going to ask you, like, is he still in yoga
Where
class? Like, what is going on?
No, so I should probably mention that. He got home probably a little after I did, and he was sort of, he had been texting me beforehand. And he was like, do you need anything before I come home? Like, I'm gonna go to CVS. And I was like, oh, actually, can you get me a handheld fan? Because I was so hot at the end of my pregnancy. You know, it's like the end of summer. It's blazing hot. Like, I could really use a fan, right? So he like sends me a picture of like three different handheld fans. And at that point, I was already in labor land, and I was like, I don't know, the blue one. Like, is this me? Like, just get me a fan. Like, I can't, you know, I was having a hard time kind of like making decisions already. So he was in a shower, and I was like, I think we need to call the midwife. And he was like, all right, like, I'll be right out. You know, he's sort of like freaking out. He's trying to help me through contractions. Like, he would like come behind me and like put a hand on my back, and I'd just be like, don't touch me. Like, I just like couldn't, I was in my zone, and I didn't want any sort of, I don't know, interference. And a tiny little piece of me kind of like felt bad, because like I know he really wanted to be supportive and to be helpful, but like I couldn't take like any sort of like touch, or like I just needed to kind of be alone to do my thing, basically. So he called the midwife. She of course wanted to talk to me, so she kept me on the phone through a couple of contractions, and I was doing okay. Like, you know, I had to stop while I was talking to her when the contractions started. But I think she kind of felt like I was doing okay. It was going to be a while longer, so she was like, you know, I think it's a little soon for you to come in, but if you would feel more comfortable coming in to get checked, you certainly could. And I was like, yeah, I think I'd like to come in. And she's like, okay, no problem. I can definitely help guide the process. This was not the midwife that I'd been seeing throughout my pregnancy. So there are seven midwives, I believe, in this practice. And you know, it's just sort of you get whoever's on call when you go into labor. So it was not my primary midwife, but she was very nice. And I was like, yeah, I think we're gonna go in. So, you know, I'll She's like, all right, I'll see you when you get here. I'll have them page me once you get to the ER, because the typically OB residents will triage patients in the ER. But if they know that you're a midwifery patient, they'll page the midwife. So we started driving there. I finally got to listen to my, you know, I had made a Labor Day playlist, like a birth playlist. And I hadn't even thought to put it on until we got into the car. So I'm like, oh, fine. Good. Get my, you know, Labor Day playlist going. I got this. It's gonna be a while, you know. So we're driving there, and we're on the highway, and there's this point on the highway where it splits north and south, and we had to go south. And Adam was in the lane to go north, and I, like, in between contractions, I'm like, you need to switch lanes, we're going the other way. I was like, are we gonna make it to this hospital, right? Because we almost went in the complete opposite direction.
I always like that's the perfect example of how, because we always talk about going into labor land and going deep into these sort of altered birth states. But it's a great point to mention that it's not like a trance, like you're out of it. You're deep, and then you're like, you go deep into your delta and your waves, and then you come up because you can have also your very logic beta waves going, like, you're on the wrong lane. Now I'm going to go back down.
And that's exactly what happened. So I'm just like, all right, let's. So, you know, we get to the hospital,
Okay,
we go
wait.
into triage, you know, oh,
Yeah.
sure.
I'm gonna like I just took a glance at the time because I was wrapped up in your story. We need to take a break. Let's take a quick break.
Okay.
We'll be right back with when you get to the hospital. Being responsible for the well-being of your family can be overwhelming because there are so many things to consider in order to keep everyone healthy. So I totally appreciate it when a product like Branch Basic comes along that makes my life easier and gives me peace of mind. The people at Branch Basics are really committed to lessening the toxicity in our lives, starting with an all-purpose cleaning concentrate that is so easy to use and really works. I love their system of having just one concentrate that you dilute and use for everything, plus how they've created a starter kit that includes the Branch Basics concentrate, along with five different refillable bottles that have smart labels showing you exactly how to dilute the concentrate for the specific area you want to clean without having to think about ratios or do any math. So, for example, if you grab the all-purpose bottle, it has a line that shows you how much water to add, and then another line for how much concentrate to add. You just fill it to the lines, do a little shaking, and there you go, you're ready to clean. With the contents of one concentrate and typical use, you can fill three all-purpose bottles, three bathroom bottles, three streak-free bottles, three foaming wash bottles, and do 64 loads of laundry. Isn't that amazing? The Branch Basics Concentrate cleans beautifully and simplifies my life. And one of the things I like most is that there are no added fragrances or essential oils of any kind, which for me means no coughing while I clean and no teary eyes and no sputtering. It's just delightful. The Branch Basics Concentrate is non-GMO, plant and mineral based, biodegradable, has no harmful preservatives, and it hasn't been tested on animals either. The starter kit comes with the concentrate and the 5 refillable bottles, and there's also a version that includes a jar of oxygen boost for tough stains or when you need extra power for your laundry. Choose to clean your house safely and effectively with Branch Basics. And you, my mighty Birthful listener, can get 15% off a Branch Basics starter kit by going to branchbasics.com and entering my code Birthful at checkout. So that's Branch Basics, BranchBasics.com with promo code Birthful to get 15% off your starter kit. Just make sure you include the promo code Birthful so they know who sent you. So branchbasics.com with the promo code Birthful. All right, so we're back. So sorry to interrupt. No, he didn't take the wrong turn. You got him in the right lane and you made it to the hospital. What happened then?
Yes. Yeah, so we went through triage and, you know, it's like you get in there and they want you to fill out all this paperwork. And I'm like, the last thing that I want to do right now is like fill up. And they're like, so would you like your baby's photos taken in the hospital? And I'm like, yeah, fine, whatever. Like, I just get me back in the back. I at this point was like, I don't know if I hit transition or I was very, very close, which I didn't realize till after, of course. So they got me in the back, you know, they make me get in a Johnny. I have to put on these 2 monitors, you know, one for the contractions and one for the baby's heart rate. And they're having a really, really hard time finding baby's heart rate. And they kept asking me, like, you know, have you noticed any decreased movement? Have you noticed decreased movement? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, that was sort of the farthest thing from my mind. But then I started kind of getting worried. I was like, crap, like, should I have been paying more attention? Was she still moving around, you know? But I think that they just had a really hard time finding her heart rate because she was so low and we just didn't know it yet. So, you know, they're like, we're sitting around in triage. I'm sitting bolt upright on this gurney. They actually raised it to be at like a 90 degree angle or close to it because for whatever reason, that was like the only position that I felt comfortable in, just like sitting straight up. So they're like, look, the midwife isn't answering our page. We're just going to have one of the OB residents check you. Is that okay? I'm like, yeah, that's fine. So of course I had to lay down for her to check me, which was not pleasant. And you know, I hadn't had any cervical checks up till that point. I had just had my 39-week visit a couple of days prior and they offered a cervical check that I declined because, you know, that saying your cervix isn't a crystal ball. I was just like, you know what? I don't need to know how dilated I am right now. It's not going to be helpful to me. And I just felt like I would just focus on that if I had known. So they kept asking me, you know, like, are you dilated yet? And I'm like, well, I don't know, you know. So she checked me and it was like super uncomfortable. And she was like, she finishes and she's like, guess how dilated you are. And in my head, I'm like, this woman is not serious right now. She's asking me to guess. And I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea how dilated I am. Can you just tell me? And she's like, you're fully dilated with a bulging bag. And I was like, I like sat up from totally reclined. I was like, what? Seriously? It was like the best news that I had gotten all day. I was like, oh, she's like, yeah, we need to get you upstairs right now. And I'm actually going to go with you in the elevator and I'm going to put some gloves on just in case. And I was like, oh my God, like this is happening. Like this baby is really coming like right now. So at that point, the people who were going to be in the labor room were Adam, my mother, and my best friend. So neither of them, my best friend and my mom weren't there yet, but I was like, well, you know, we can't wait anymore. We got to go upstairs. So as they were wheeling me out of triage, my best friend came in. So I'm like, oh, good. So she's here. And I'm like, can you just like keep an eye out for my mom? Like, you know, I want to make sure that my mom gets here and like sees the birth of her first grandchild. So they're like, yep, we'll send her right up. And they were like, you know, do you have any birth preferences? Now, all of our fully stocked hospital bag, I had like this nice printout with all these like icons of all of our birth preferences, and like, you know, like I had snacks and honey sticks and my handheld fan and all this really great stuff. And Adam kept asking triage, like, is our car going to be okay out there? Because I'm in like the 15-minute parking only. Like, should I move it now? Should I go get the bag? And then everybody just kept saying, you've got plenty of time, because this was before I'd been checked. Like, you're fine. You can move it later. Don't worry about it. No one's going to tow you, whatever. Well, we didn't have time to get the bag. So I sort of gave a quick and dirty rundown of my birth preferences. And they were like, you know what? Do you want to just, we can just wheel you down to the ABC. It's right down the hall. Like, it'll just take 2 seconds. Like, you're not ready to sort of push yet. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Right before that happened, the midwife checked me and she asked if I wanted her to break my water, because she said, you know, I think this is going to go really quickly if I break your water. And I was sort of like, okay, whatever. Like, again, not really able to make decisions, but I was like, okay, fine. So she broke my water. I wasn't ready to push yet. So they're like, yeah, let's just go down to the ABC. So they open the door. My mom comes in. I'm like, oh, good. We're just moving rooms. You're just in time. And then all of a sudden a contraction hit. And I was like, oh my God, I feel like I need to push. And they were like, oh okay. We're going to stay here. So they're like, all right, why don't you try to push? So I try to push. I really feel like I'm pushing. And they're like, you're really not. And I can see they're sort of like exchanging glances. I think they're saying to themselves, like, you know, first time mom, like, she's gonna be a while. Let's go back down to the ABC. So we're getting ready to go again, and then again another contraction hit, and this time I was really able to push. So I started pushing, and that was like a really productive push. So I was side buying, because again, for whatever reason, that was just the way that my body wanted to be. It was the way that I felt the most comfortable. So I have like the nurse holding up my leg, Adam's up by my head, I'm squeezing his hand for dear life, and they're like, all right, you gotta keep your leg up, open pelvis, you gotta keep your leg. And I'm like, I'm trying here, you know, it's sort of not the easiest thing when you're also trying to push a baby out. So the baby, I pushed a few more times and the baby starts to crown, and they're like, Dad, do you want to see your baby? And Adam's like, no, thanks. Like, I'm good. And I was fine with that. And then, you know, they're like, Mom, do you want to reach down and feel your baby? Which I know for a lot of women, that's really like motivating and like really a powerful moment. But I was just like, no, like, I'm okay. I could feel it all. I just, it was not something that I was interested in at that point in time. So they're like, okay. So the plan was, which we were able to relay to them when we first got there, Adam was going to reveal the sex of the baby because we didn't know if she was a boy or a girl. So they were like, great, that's totally fine. You know, finally I pushed. I probably pushed for like, I don't know, 15 or 20 minutes. It wasn't long at all. For the first time mom, I feel like.
And you hadn't been at the birth center or at the hospital for long either.
No, I was all told I was in triage for about an hour. And I was in the labor and delivery room also for about an hour. And that's from start to finish with them, like, you know, finishing up with the post-birth and me getting up and going to the bathroom. Like, it was really, really fast. Like, I had been in the labor and delivery room for, like, maybe a half hour from when I got there to, like, when I actually delivered her. So the baby comes out, she's screaming, her arms are like straight, her arms and legs are just like sticking straight out. And they're like, okay, Dad, what do we got? And he looks at her and he goes, I'm not sure. he didn't, you know, when babies are first born and like their genitals are kind of swollen still, like he didn't, like in that moment, he just like didn't know. And I just screamed, it's a girl, it's a girl, look at that baby. And it was just like this amazing moment. And I was just like, oh my gosh, it was like incredible. It was, and it was so funny the way that Adam reacted. And that's a story that we like to tell people now. And it was great. It went wonderful. So they put her right on my chest. You know, they sort of like stimulated her a little bit. She was doing good. She was crying. She had good tone and everything. Good color. We got to do skin to skin for an hour, which was great. We did delayed cord clamping, you know, it was like totally white. And actually, I just listened to the last episode that you just put on with that Wait for White, mm-hmm. the last birth story episode that you just aired. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so great. I had never heard that either. But we waited for White though. So I was really happy about that. And She was like, all right, do you want to try to get her to latch? Because I was planning on breastfeeding. And I was like, yeah. And she did great. She latched right away. She's like, oh, she's a pro already. I was just like on this total birth high. I delivered the placenta fine. She let us kind of look at the placenta a little bit and showed us like, the inside and outside and how it works and everything. So that was really cool. And I was like, she was like, okay, I'm gonna sit you up because you do have a tear here. And I'm like, all right, like how bad is it? And she's like, oh, it's not too bad, but it does need a few stitches. And I'm like, no, but like, how bad is it? She's like, it's a second degree tear. Like I was looking for like the nitty gritty. Like I want to know what degree. I've listened to enough birth stories. I know generally what the different degrees mean. So I'm like, all right, second degree tear, not great, but not terrible. Could be worse. I didn't have an epidural, obviously. That was not part of my birth plan to have an epidural, but I wouldn't have had the option to get one anyway because everything happened so quickly. So they gave me a local anesthetic for the stitches, but those stitches were like super painful. And my mom told me after, like, she was watching me, I'm holding the baby, I have her on my chest, and like she would watch my whole body like tense up. And I'm like, oh, okay, like sort of relax a little bit. So that kind of sucked and,
Yeah.
was
I find
not ideal.
those are really hard because with the contractions
Yeah.
and then you're in your rhythm, you've got your endorphins, contractions are coming at a regular
Yes.
pace, so you know when it's going to be intense. With this, it's just some and everything's swollen and the baby just came out through there and now you're going to poke it and pinch it and it's like, gah. Yeah, it's very
Right,
surprising. Yeah.
exactly. Yes, it was. But the stitching went fine. There were no issues with that. My heart rate was really elevated post, like immediately postpartum for some reason, and they never kind of figured out why, and it kind of went down on its own. I'm thinking maybe I was just really dehydrated because I hadn't, I had this whole plan of like how I was gonna like, stay hydrated and I was gonna eat honey sticks for energy and like this. And I did none of that. Because the labor kind of like took me by surprise, I guess. So yeah, all told, I was in labor for about 12 and a half hours from first contraction to delivery. So pretty quick for a first time mom, I felt.
Oh, for sure.
And
And
yeah,
not only that, like you went and got your hair done. You had your hair did in between all this.
is great. I'm gonna have like nice hair for the pictures and just perfect.
I love it. Hey, Ivy, let's
Yeah.
take another quick break, but when we come back, let's jump into anything else you have to say about the birth and then postpartum. We'll be right back. Your body and the seasons will soon be changing. So before you get another onesie for your baby, please make sure you give yourself some wardrobe love with a new look from ModCloth, which is full of great pieces that are easy to transition from winter to spring. At ModCloth, they believe there's no such thing as an ordinary outfit, and their clothes are crafted by a team of in-house designers with signature styles that include hand-drawn prints and standout silhouettes. ModCloth also believes that fashion should celebrate all bodies, and so they offer a full range of sizes from extra extra small to 4X. And if you have a question about fit, their team of mod stylists can hook you up with complimentary sizing and styling help. Now, not all online shopping experiences are the same, and I really like the way ModCloth organizes their website, letting you narrow down choices to say long sleeve dresses, work blouses, or block heeled shoes. It's also very refreshing that all the clothes have pictures of different size models wearing them, so you can get a better idea of how things would look on your body. Then there's even a quirky top section, which I of course had to check out, and I found the most delightful t-shirt with a sketch drawing of David Bowie as a sloth with the word slowy underneath that may just become my new go-to for postpartum meetings because that's the spirit for postpartum, slowy. Go check it out at modcloth.com. And to get 25% off your purchase of $100 or more, go to modcloth.com. And enter the code BIRTHFUL at checkout. This offer is valid for one-time use only and expires on April 7th, 2019. So to get 25% off your purchase of $100 or more, go to modcloth.com and enter the code BIRTHFUL at checkout and do it before April 7th. Make sure to use the code BIRTHFUL so they know who sent you. And we are back. So you just had a baby. Congratulations.
Thank
What a good story. And so basically this birth went pretty much according to your plans, maybe a bit faster than you thought. Like, what were your thoughts? How did you feel about the birth afterwards?
I mean, I felt great about the birth. I was totally shell-shocked. Like, I remember sitting in the postpartum room that night, like after my parents had left and my friend had left, so it was just me, Adam, and the baby. And I just remember looking at the baby and then looking at him, and I was just like, she was inside of me like 3, 4 hours ago. Like, I almost couldn't wrap my brain around it. I can see now why, women who have true precipitous labor, like how I could imagine why that feels like getting hit by a train, because I sort of felt that way a little bit, and my labor wasn't quite that fast. So yeah, I was totally shell shocked, but really felt like super empowered and just like a badass. I was like, well, I just did that. I just totally rocked this labor and this birth. And it was like exactly, not exactly what I had planned, because no birth ever is, I don't think, but it was like I could not have asked for a better birth, just sort of generally speaking, like, broad picture. It was great. I felt awesome. And I was in the hospital for a couple of days, I guess sort of the standard, because I didn't have any complications. Everything seemed to be going according to plan. I did have a lot of trouble breastfeeding. So while I was in the hospital, every time I would try to get her to latch, that first latch went great. And then for whatever reason, I was having a really hard time getting her to latch after that. And every time I did try to get her to latch, I would call the nurses and I'd be like, can someone come down to my room and help me try to get her to latch? Because I really was having a hard time. And I have a few friends who've also given birth at this particular hospital, and they had some not so great experiences with the lactation consultants there. And sort of the recommendation was given to me, like, make sure that you insist to see a lactation consultant before you leave. So basically, as soon as I got to my postpartum room, I was like, well, I want to see an LC. So if you can send one to the room, that'd be great. So a lactation, they have IB CLCs who see the patients there. So they're also RNs. So I had requested a few times, and the second day that I was there, one of the lactation consultants came down, and she kind of observed me try to get her to latch, and she was sort of like in and out, and she was kind of like, yeah, well, just keep trying. Like, it looks good. You got her to latch there, kind of. So just, keep at it. And I was like, well, that wasn't super helpful. And then the day of discharge, I requested to see another one, and a different one came to the room, and she actually brought like a little cup and a syringe. And she was like, well, here, you can use these if you need to. But she didn't really sort of explain to me how to properly like cup feed or syringe feed. So I just kind of like got sent home with this stuff and was like, just keep trying, you'll get the hang of it. So the day of my discharge, I was waiting. Adam had run home to grab some stuff, and I was waiting to be cleared by the midwives. The pediatrician had already come and cleared Aura. So I heard a knock on the door, and I heard, "Hey, it's Maggie." And Maggie is my midwife's name, the midwife that I had been seeing my whole pregnancy. But for whatever reason, in my postpartum haze, I was like, "Who's Maggie?" And then she like came around the curtain, and I was like, "Maggie, it's you!" Like, how? She's like, "I didn't even realize you were here." Like, she just happened to be rounding that day, and she's like, "How did everything go?" And all of a sudden, I just like burst into tears. And she was like, "Oh no, I'm sorry. Was it bad?" And I was like, "No. Like, it was amazing. I don't, but I don't know why I'm crying right now." And in that moment, I was kind of like, "Oh no, like, we're not in Kansas anymore. Like, so, this is some like things are not the way that they used to be." Because I'm not an emotional person typically, and I'm really not a crier. So for me to just sort of like burst into tears when someone just asks me a simple question about this amazing birth that I thought went great and I felt really empowered by, I was like, oh, this is something different. So she was like, that's totally normal to cry like that. Like, you're gonna have really high highs and really low lows, and if things don't get better after like 2 weeks or so, like, definitely give us a call. And I'm like, okay, thanks. Like, So they sent me on my way. Everything was fine. So we went home, and our first night at home as a family was so hard. It was so, so difficult. I like could not get her to latch. She was just basically biting down, and she had a really, really shallow latch, and she essentially wasn't getting any food, which I didn't sort of realize at the time, but she screamed all night, so much so that her little voice was hoarse in the morning. I just felt so awful. And I remember being up in the middle of the night, I'm crying, she's crying, I'm looking at these like sample canisters of formula in my cabinet, and I'm like, should I just make a formula bottle? But I'm like, no, like I want her to be breastfed. I really want this to succeed. Like, I don't want to give her formula yet. Like, I'm just going to hand express. So I like hand express into this little tiny cup, and basically we syringe fed her. But my understanding with a syringe feeding, you can tell me if I'm right, is you're supposed to like basically have your pinky in the baby's mouth as well, so that they sort of have to like work for it a little bit. Is that right?
You know, well, so I am not a lactation consultant, but in my experience at that mm-hmm. point, and if you're doing, if it's, it, the difference is between like, is this a one-time thing or is it a habit? Like if you were constantly sure. cup feeding her, and so then you were trying to get stimulation of her sucking, and especially like say for mm-hmm. preemies and that kind of thing, yes. But for a baby that is so frustrated and screaming in the middle of the night and just needs some food,
yeah,
you just need food. So I wouldn't worry yeah. about other things like that right at that moment.
Okay. Well, that's what we ended up doing. So we gave her some of that, and I was like, all right, I'm going to call the warm line in the morning. The hospital has this thing called the warm line where, I don't know, from say 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., you can call and you get an IBCLC on the phone who can sort of talk to you about any sort of breastfeeding issues or if you're having any other, you know, concerns postpartum. So I called the warm line first thing in the morning, and I was like, oh my God, I have a pump in my basement. I've never even opened it. I didn't, like, in the middle of the night when, like, she's crying, I'm crying, like, it didn't even occur to me, like, Ivy, get out the breast pump. So I was like, oh, of course I have a pump. Why didn't I think of that? And so that made me feel guilty too. And she was like, yeah, she's like, I'll give you an appointment to meet with one of the outpatient lactation consultants for tomorrow. But in the meantime, you know, she gave me some instructions for, like when, you know, try to get her to latch. If I need to, I could pump a little bit first, just to, because I was also engorged because my milk at that point had, was coming in. And, you know, she gave me some really good information, and she was like, you know, sort of like, help is on the way. You can come in tomorrow to meet with the lactation consultant. So I was like, okay, great. So the next morning we went to go to meet with the lactation consultant, who was just sort of an angel. She met with us for like 2.5 hours. We did a weighted feed. She observed me trying to get her to latch, and she looked and saw that she, so in the hospital, they told us that she did not have a tongue or lip ties. This particular lactation consultant, she felt that she did have a minor tongue and lip ties. But she was like, you know, bring it back to the pediatrician. You can talk to them about it and see if you want to get it corrected and all that. But, you know, correcting it is no guarantee that she's going to be able to latch, because I consistently would get that really shallow, really, really painful latch. So I went home with a plan to basically pump, you know, try to feed her if I could. And this lactation consultant gave me the best piece of advice that I've gotten during this whole sort of breastfeeding journey. She said, none of this is going to work if either one of you is crying. Like, she's not going to be able to latch. You're not going to be able to get her to latch if either one of you is, like, you know, crying, hungry, really upset, whatever. So we did that. We would do, every time I tried to feed her, we'd do skin, I'd get her down to her diaper, I'd take my shirt off, we'd do skin to skin for a while so I could get her to sort of like start to root around and kind of like wake up. And because that was the other thing, she was so sleepy because she was essentially so hungry and like starving. So every single time I tried to feed her, we'd do the skin to skin, I'd try to get her to latch, I'd struggle and struggle, and I'd start crying, and I'd be like, all right, I'm just gonna pump, like, you know, at that point I had some Express Milk like in the fridge, so I would have a bottle ready to go. And you know, we brought her to the pediatrician, a couple of different pediatricians at this particular practice, and One thought she had tongue and lip ties, the other didn't. And again, they were kind of like, you know, we could refer you to get them corrected, but it's not a guarantee that she's going to be able to latch after that. You know, so ultimately we decided not to try to get them corrected, and I would just keep trying to breastfeed. So, you know, I kept trying it, and I just felt so defeated and so much like, you know, I can't do this one sort of basic, quote unquote, natural thing for my baby. And it really had an impact on my mood. So finally, I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to pump. And I'm just going to become an exclusive pumper, because this is crazy. Like, she's upset, I'm upset, like, nobody is having a good time of this. I'm just going to feed her from a bottle and just pump exclusively. So that's what I did. And so that was really challenging, because again, I had a lot of feelings of guilt. But I ended up exclusively pumping for about 6 weeks. And, you know, around the time that I stopped, I had to get put on antibiotics because I thought I had some kind of infection. So I had to pump and dump. And pumping and dumping like 8 times a day was like so just like, again, just feeling totally defeated, like dumping it down the drain. And I kind of got mixed reviews whether or not I had to pump and dump. You know, the midwife that I talked to said the benefit of your breast milk outweighs the risk of her getting some of this antibiotic in it. But the pediatrician was like, I can't recommend that. Absolutely not. You know, so we just went with pumping and dumping.
Oh, and that's so demoralizing too, right?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
It sucked.
Yeah. Yeah. Because
yeah,
already
thank you.
Exclusively pumping, I had to do that too. And it's the worst of both worlds, because you're not getting the benefit. Oh my God. You're not getting the benefit of always available to the breast, just latch on the go whenever, baba, all easy, right? Milk's available. You're not getting that benefit. And then you're also not getting the benefit of, I'll just mix up this bottle, this, you know, formula, and it's ready and to go whenever. You actually have to basically double your time, because you're all the time that you're pumping, like you would, that would be the time that you normal breastfeed, right? Or even longer, because you're not as productive. The pump is not as productive at extracting milk as your baby is in general.
Yes.
So there's that. And then you have to sit down and feed your baby. And then you have all these things to clean. It sucks.
Crazy town. It's crazy. And I actually had a friend from college who exclusively pumped for a year. And I was kind of like, I couldn't believe it. And like that sort of like long range thinking, I was like, I can't see myself doing this into next week, never mind into the next year. So like, I really, kudos to any mom who's able to do that for any period of time, because it is really challenging. And like, you know, Adam would get up with me for middle of the night feeds, and like I would pump and he would feed the baby. And I just felt like I was missing out on time with my baby. Like, it was great that he was able to feed her and bond with her. And like, of course that's important and necessary. But I was missing out and also taking up all this other time. Like, he would go back to bed and I'd have to clean all my pump parts, you know? So that was like really, really challenging. We transitioned her to formula at 6 weeks, and it ended up being fine. I was afraid she was going to reject the formula it would cause like, you know, she'd have like reflux or like it wouldn't, we'd have to try to find the right formula. But luckily we lucked out with the first formula we happened to pick. She did fine with it, and she's, you know, she's been fine. It's fine. But it was just tough, you know, being like postpartum and having all these expectations of like how things are going to go, and that you're going to be able to feed your baby. You know, it's breastfeeding. It's easy. Like, you know, yeah, right.
Yeah, I would say
that was tough.
It's natural, but it's not easy. And you know, if you think, I love that comment you made about that the lactation consultant talked to you and said, none of this is going to work if either one of you is crying. There's another, I'm going to add that to my bag of mantras for breastfeeding. And one of them, yeah, thank you for that. Another lactation consultant once told me, it's like, look, when you start to walk, how many times do you fall? It's completely natural. But how many times do you fall and fail before you actually start to walk? Like, that's natural, but it's not easy. Same thing with breastfeeding. Yeah. It's like, change in expectations, right? Change in expectations.
Right. Yeah. Oh,
And
that makes
that's
so
if you
much
don't
sense.
have any issues going on. I mean, you guys had other things layered on top of that.
Right, yes. So I also had some physical healing issues. So in addition to the breastfeeding issues, I was about a week postpartum, I think, and I was taking a shower, and when I was getting out of the shower, I like felt something on like the inside of my leg, like sort of up by my crotch, and I was like, oh, what's that? Like, and it was like a piece of hair was like sort of stuck to something. So I'm like, oh, you know, so I go to pull it, and all of a sudden I got this like shooting pain. And I was like, oh my God, I have like my hair is like tangled up, like stuck on a stitch or something. I didn't know what was going on. So I like glance down and I see like a tangle of hair or something like hanging down. And I'm like, oh my God, like I'm gonna have to like cut the hair out. Like it's, I don't know what it's stuck on. But I'm like, I'm horrified, right? And I don't say anything to like Adam or anything. So I go and get the scissors and I like cut it and I look at it and I realize it's not my hair, it's like a stitch or something that was hanging down, like the material that they used to stitch me. So I was like, oh my God, like what have I done? My vagina's never gonna heal. Like what, who cuts their own stitch out? Like what, but it was like an inch and a half hanging down. Like I had to do something about it. So I'm like,
It
whatever. I'll
wasn't
just tell the
helping
midwife.
you heal for sure. Like it was just hanging
Right,
out there. It
right.
was doing nothing.
Oh my gosh. So I call the midwife's office in the morning and they had me come right in and she looked and she was like, yep, you cut out one of your stitches, it looks like. And I also she also noted that I had like a smaller laceration on the side that wasn't stitched. That was sort of slowly healing, but she's like, it looks like everything's gonna heal just fine. You didn't like mutilate yourself or anything, it's gonna be fine. I was like, okay, thank you. So that went okay. And then luckily my 6 week postpartum checkup went fine. And I was like, okay, like, she kind of gave me the go ahead for to resume exercise and resume sex if I was ready. So I was really happy to be exercising again because my mood was not great. I would say I had probably had the baby blues. I'm not sure that I'd go so far as to say I had postpartum depression, but like I was just still like super emotional and just like really kind of sad. And I really wanted to get back to exercising because that is something that has always helped my mood. So I sort of gradually got back into that. Started with walking and then got back into power yoga pretty quickly soon after. We had tried to get back into having sex, but it was super, super painful to the point where I couldn't do it. So I had scheduled a visit for 3 months after my 6 month postpartum visit. That would become my new sort of yearly exam time. And I was really glad that I had that visit scheduled because, I went in and I told my midwife, I was about 5 months postpartum at this point, and I was like, look, something is wrong. Like I'm trying and I'm having a really hard time. Things are really painful when we try to have sex. And she was like, well, do you want to go see a pelvic floor physical therapist? And I was like, yes, please. Because I had, heard that pelvic floor PT is part of the sort of standard of care in other countries for postpartum moms. And I was just searching for something that would help. So I went in and it turns out I had essentially the way that it was explained to me was that my pelvic floor was sort of spasming and that's why it was so painful. And I also found out that I had an ab separation, which I wasn't aware of. So she gave me some exercises to start working on the diastasis or the ab separation. And she did some internal work to help with my pelvic floor and the spasms. And going to see my pelvic floor PT, who was such a wonderful human being, was literally life-changing. It made such a difference, and it was so I guess sort of comforting to know that like have identified the problem and to have concrete ways of working on it and to fix it so that I wasn't having this issue anymore. It made such a huge, huge difference, and it also I was able to then be more mindful of when I was exercising, sort of engaging my abdominals and making sure that I wasn't causing more damage and making the separation worse versus, making it better. So if there's one thing that I could recommend to any postpartum mom is that if you're having any sort of issues, please, with any sort of physical issues, pain or like leaking urine or anything like that, ask for a referral to a pelvic floor PT because it makes such a difference.
And I am so happy to hear one that you were better, right? That you
Yes.
found something to make you feel better and address your issues, and that you were able to find out about the diastasis so you can address that as well.
Yes.
But to also hear you recommending it to other people because that's something that I would love like for everybody to go do at least one checkup with a pelvic floor PT, which I think it's more of the like. At that point, were you like, I'll just try anything, give it to me? Or was it like, oh, I'm hesitant about this because it's kind of embarrassing, but I will, like, what was your mindset at that point? Because I think a hang up is part of the problem that we don't go and go do pelvic PT.
Well, I think the fact that I had heard of it before and the fact that I had learned that it was standard of care in some other countries, that really helped. And I was, part of me also was at that point where I was just like I can't go on like this. Like something needs to change. Of course, this having someone assess your pelvic floor is not something that's comfortable, and part of the assessment, she asked me all kinds of questions that are really, really personal that you don't typically talk about with anyone, never mind someone you just met. And, she did an external exam and as well as an internal exam. So, it was definitely, I had to sort of go outside of my comfort zone a little bit, but I was just at this point where I felt like something needed to change. I had to do something, so I might as well try this.
Yeah, no, and I thank you for sharing your experience because I'm always very curious. I know I speak to a lot of practitioners, then we recommend it, but I don't speak to that many, on the show at least, to that many people who have had it done and have had, think it was really a great thing to do.
Yeah, it was a really great experience, and I pretty much recommend it to anyone who will listen. Like anybody that I know who's like having a baby or just had a baby, like, look, if you're having any issues, consider, asking for a referral to a pelvic floor PT.
Yeah, and it's France that does it part of their
Okay.
they I think everybody gets about 10 or 12 visits after birth as part of their postpartum care.
Amazing.
Awesome. So then this was like maybe 8 months out, you were feeling physically more or less back to normal or even
Yes.
different, but finding your new normal.
Exactly. Yeah. And things have been quite smooth from that point on. I haven't really hit any other roadblocks, and I think, the PT really made all the difference in the world, especially with my confidence levels as well.
That's awesome. So, Ivy, what as we wrap up, what are some parting words for listeners or some things that you wanted to make sure we got to that we didn't, or some other recommended resources that really helped you?
Well, I think, as I mentioned earlier, Expectful is a really wonderful resource. And I think just sort of, educating yourself as much as possible, whether that be through listening to podcasts or reading or watching like YouTube videos of births, things like that. To me, knowledge is power. And I think, the more knowledge that you can give yourself ahead of time, the better prepared you're going to be.
And I am the nerdiest person on information and knowledge, so I am 100% behind you. Thank you so very much for coming on the show to tell your story.
Oh, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. I think that the fact that you're giving new parents this platform is such a wonderful, wonderful thing. And it's only going to help all of the families who are preparing for their first or subsequent little ones.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, Patreon member benefits, send me messages, and more. I'm also on Facebook or Twitter as at Birthful, so come say hi. And if you're looking to prepare for what postpartum will send your way, then go to birthfulcourses.com and sign up for my Thrive with Your Newborn postpartum preparation classes before baby arrives. Let's get you postpartum ready so you can not just survive those first few weeks, but actually enjoy them. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, the Birthful Patreon supporters, and by the wonderful people at Branch Basics and ModCloth. Go to branchbasics.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 15% off a starter kit, and go to ModCloth.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 25% off your purchase of $100 or more before April 7th. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin MacLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Also, the Birthful Podcast is part of the Parents on Demand Network, a network of podcasts focused on parents. Download the free Parents on Demand app on Apple and Android for easy on-the-go listening. I'm Adriana Lozada. Please join me next Wednesday when I'll be talking to another maternity pro to inform your intuition here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening.